America's 250th birthday. It's a great excuse to have some extra cake and ice cream, but we can help your celebration go well beyond that. Show your patriotism with America 250 apparel that will become a memento of this special year. We also have special episodes on AFA Stream to help underscore that America is a Christian nation and help you find God in the Constitution. Find all of this and more in one place. afa.net/topics/250.
Welcome to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve, Senior Pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas. Now, here's Pastor Jeff.
Well, good morning and welcome to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. I wanted to read to you from Revelation chapter 2. This is the church, the Lord's message to the church in Ephesus. He says, "To the angel of the church in Ephesus write, the one who holds the seven stars in his right hand, the one who walks among the seven golden lampstands, says this, I know your deeds and your toil and perseverance, and that you cannot tolerate evil men, and you put to the test those who call themselves apostles, and they are not, and you found them to be false, and you have perseverance and have endured for my name's sake and have not grown weary." So I'm sitting across the table from a guy who has perseverance, and he has not grown weary, and that's professional golfer Zach Fisher. He just recently won on the Corn Ferry Tour his first victory, the Acunet Classic in Amarillo, and he shot 14 under par, and just a great moment for him and for his family. His mom and dad were there, his wife Katie and his two girls were there. And so, Zach, we welcome you to Real Truth for Today. And I just want to say congratulations, man. You had a lot of people rooting for you.
Oh, man. Thank you so much, Jeff. And thanks for having me on. Yeah, it was kind of a storybook thing for me. It literally couldn't have written it any better. The Lord always does things in His timing, and there have been many times in my life where, you know, I wanted it right now. I was reading in my quiet time about Abraham and how the Lord, you know, wanted to give him the descendants, you know, more than the multiple of the stars in the sky.
Right.
And he never got to see that personally, but he gets to see it, you know, through heaven, and gets to see it. But to have that story come through. And I feel like him and Job, and there's so many models of perseverance. I think my story is way far below, but I appreciate the sentiment. And yeah, it's been a crazy road. 171 starts before I had my first win.
Yeah.
And yeah, I wanted that first win as soon as I turned out on the tour. Who would have thought it was 12, 13 years after I turned pro? But yeah, it's always in His timing. And I mean, to have both of my little girls, Hallie is 5 and then Tessa is 2, and then my wife was there and my parents were there, and they maybe only get to go to like 6 events a year.
Right.
And so it could have been any of the events, and it just happened to be that one. It was in Texas.
Yeah.
Which, being from Texarkana, Texas, everybody from Amarillo, I feel like if you're from Texas, it's like its own country. Yeah. And so everybody loved it, and it was awesome. It was really
okay.
Cool.
So we're obviously from East Texas, where it's pretty and green.
Yes.
West Texas has its own. You have to, that's an acquired taste as
Absolutely.
Far as the beauty. So what's the golf course like there in Amarillo?
You would think it would be very just flat, boring. But Amarillo, I mean, I didn't know this, but the canyon that's out there is the second biggest canyon in the world behind the Grand Canyon. So there's definitely some elevation change, and it's pretty in its own right. I wouldn't say it's near as pretty as our big tall pines here right. in East Texas. I mean, I just love it. And the wind just blows constantly out there. It was howling when we played the tournament. And that was the running joke, was like, the wind doesn't blow, it's just not a day in Amarillo. So yeah, it's definitely different.
Okay, so golf, for all those that love golf, you know, it's people that, there are people that are fans of golf and then people that love golf. And when you love golf, when you got bitten by the golf bug, you want to play all the time. You know, people, they ding President Trump on, well, he plays golf all the time. Trump's a golfer.
Yeah, he does it for fun. It's a hobby.
Yeah. And so, as you know, and your dad, your family's all into golf, you want to get out there. I mean, you know, every few days it's like, man, I got to swing a club.
Yeah, especially when you get the quote swing thought and you think you found it. That's probably the most dangerous words in golf. If you say, I found it, because then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, the golf will put you in your place really fast and you will go right back to where you started really quickly.
Well, golf is without a doubt, I think any athlete will tell you this, that's the hardest game that has ever been invented is golf. Mm-hmm. Because so many different shots and so many different courses and mm-hmm. dealing with the wind. I've said before, the wind makes golf not really fair. For, you know, if you tee off in the morning and it's windy mm-hmm. and then the wind dies down in the afternoon, well, that guy in the afternoon has a big advantage over you.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you see that the most probably in the Open Championship, where everybody tees off of number one and they tee off from like 6 o'clock in the morning till, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And so you get people that, play in the morning, there may not be any wind. And then in the afternoon, it may be blowing, 35 miles per hour. And so, yeah, golf is very unfair per se. I mean, it's really closely related to life because sometimes life's just not fair.
Okay, you're the only guy on the planet that has won Q School twice, which is pretty amazing. It's hard. Q School, it might be harder than winning a tournament, wouldn't you say?
In some ways, it definitely is. It's because there's three different stages of Q School. So you have like the first stage of Q School, and it's one big giant tournament, but you have to pass through different levels. And so like they normally take about 20 people from the first stage and maybe 80 people playing. So basically a quarter. And then the second stage, they probably take, a fifth of the people. And they all go to final stage and there's probably 160, 170 competing in four rounds on one course. And it just tells you what your status is going to be the next year. And so I think both times I won, I had to go through all three stages. And I mean, it's basically a 3 month long process. And yeah, it's grueling. It's very grueling. It's tough. And once you win, you're just like, So basically when I won this tournament, it was like, oh, it was only 4 days. It wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah. it's amazing. So, golf is what people do to get out of the office. And we love to play golf as a recreation. You do it as a career.
Correct.
And that's your job. And so how do you view golf? Is it still a fun thing to do or is it just work?
No, I love golf. I always joke, I hate practice. Like I can't stand it. Jeff, if you were on the range at Texas County Country Club and you'd just come up and you saw me on the range, like, hey, I'm going to play nine holes in like 15 minutes. I'd be like, yeah, I'll come join you.
Yeah.
Jeff Jones, my swing coach, he always joked and he said that I could go play golf with four nuns and just have the time of my life. And it's true. Like I really enjoy, to your point, the challenge. And like driving range, it's like you just keep hitting the same shot over and over. You don't hole anything. It's like you don't make any putts. It's like not any fun. But yeah, like you get out on the golf course and I feel like I learn the most whenever I'm out, actually playing golf.
Yeah. Well, that was like John Daly. I don't think he liked to hit balls.
No, it's not fun. It's something you have to do.
Yeah.
Because it's just one of those things that you need to continue to hit shots to get the muscle memory and everything grooved. It's basically so that way whenever you get pressure, it's just second nature and you just go hit it. But you just don't learn anything on the driving range. And even, I've been playing golf for 32 years. Mm-hmm. I'm still learning something every single day. And that's one of the coolest things about just going out and playing holes.
Okay, so Zach, when you're playing a different, you're playing in the wind, let's say, it's not just one swing fits all. You have lots of different shots and different shots, different swings, whether you're hitting a stinger or you're hitting a high fade or whatever. Mm-hmm. So when you play in the wind, your dad used to tell me Korn Ferry Tour was known for bomb and gouge.
Yes.
Just bomb it as far as you can. Who cares where it goes? Then you just gouge mm-hmm. it out. That doesn't work. Let's say you play the British Open.
Correct.
That doesn't work there.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Bryson DeChambeau, and he went through his distance where he was literally doing long drive challenges. And he realized that whenever you play the major championships, I mean, he won two U.S. Opens, but the style of golf was a little bit different than normal for U.S. Opens. And so he realized he's never going to probably win a British Open just because the wind, the elements, everything, you can't control the ball. The longer the ball stays in the air, the more chance the wind has affected it. So to your point, the stinger shot, which Tiger made famous, mm-hmm. get a ball on the ground. The wind can't affect the ball near on the ground as it can in the air. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's you just want to keep it. And that's in Amarillo, we had a lot of wind, and you're trying to keep the ball down and making sure
it, so you're hitting a lot of stingers there?
I hit quite a few, yeah. So I never really play a 2-iron, and that basically only hit it off the tee because it comes out with not very much spin. So kind of get into the green, like it just doesn't work. Where that week I played a 2-iron every, I see, 3 out of the 4 days because I used it off the tee a lot.
Well, you don't even hear guys having a 2-iron in their bag.
No, everybody's like about woods, and I think Tommy Fleetwood may be playing a 9-wood right now,
yeah.
which I think is equivalent to a 5-iron or 4-iron, which yeah. is that's unheard of now.
Okay, so the last day, you're going into the tournament, you're up 4 strokes.
Mm-hmm.
You got, I mean, no doubt everything's swirling in your mind. Okay. It's like, okay, you would normally, if you're everything's just relaxed, you're like, okay, 4 strokes. I'm way ahead. You know, it's like a basketball team. I'm up by 20 with a half.
Well, that didn't work out for the Spurs very well.
Well, no, it didn't for the Spurs. But do you think that's because sometimes that can work against a guy if he's got a big lead? I think
yeah.
about Greg Norman in the Masters, you know, his meltdown. He was up 6 strokes, I think, something like
six
that.
Six or seven, yeah, something like that.
And he melted down. I think he shot a 78.
Right.
So what are you thinking waking up on Sunday going out to play?
I mean, to be honest with you, everybody was asking me how I slept, and I slept pretty well that day, except we had a big storm that came through that night, and it woke me up in the middle of the night, and then my oldest was, like, freaking out over the storm. And then once that storm hit, I kind of was, like, awake. And so I slept good at first, but then, I mean, there's a lot of time from waking up until my tee time because I was the last tee time.
Yeah. You're teeing off at noon or something
noon,
like that.
Noon, yeah. And so it's, yeah, like I think I ended up waking up at like 6. It's like there's 6 hours to kill mentally,
right.
which is tough. But having my family there was big because it's like, well, it's just a normal day. Like I'm getting up and getting breakfast, and the girls went out there with me. The tour provides breakfast in the morning. So like they went out there with me, and you try to make everything routine so that way everything's the same no matter what.
Right.
And yeah, it was very nerve-wracking on the first tee, just knowing that I had a 4-shot lead, even though like I've had leads in the past, but it's still, it's just tough because, you know, everybody's chasing. It's easier to chase than it is
right.
to run.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, yeah, it was very nerve-wracking, but I think they just had a lot of people praying for me because I didn't have like I was nervous, mm-hmm. don't get me wrong, but like it wasn't like I had much anxiety, which I feel like nerves and anxiety are different things.
Okay, so in golf in general, you play in any tournament. Nerves are always going to be there a little bit, I would think, on the first tee more than anything.
Yeah, I think so. Like, my mom asked me last night, actually. She was like, how nervous were you on 18? And I was like, I mean, I was nervous, but I was way more nervous on the first tee because it's the first shot. Like,
right.
I don't know. I mean, I hit them on the driving range just fine, but it's like, man, the first tee, you just, even that just walk over to the tee box, it's a big difference. Just them calling your name and everybody cheering and like it's tough to hit that first tee shot.
Well, that wasn't on TV, so I'm following along on ESPN, and you know they're not great about updating it immediately.
Right.
But you were up, I think, 3 shots, a whole number
14. Yeah.
14.
Yeah.
Okay, because they showed that. Korn Ferry showed that.
Uh-huh.
So out of the blue, shank.
Mm-hmm.
Which can derail your train if you're not careful.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. Yeah. It's. I still laugh about it. Yeah, so it all started because on the 12th hole, I had like an in-between gap wedge and a pitching wedge. And I was like, well, the pitching wedge normally goes farther, and so I'm going to take a little bit off of the pitching wedge and just hit it on the green. Well, I hit over the green, which was really bad, and I ended up saving a par there. And then I go to the 14th hole, and I'm in the same position, pitching wedge or gap wedge, and the pin's in the back again, and I'm like, well, I'm not going to hit pitching wedge over the green because it's really bad again. So
right.
we're just going to try to hit a really hard gap wedge. Bad decision. And so I just shanked it straight out of bounds. And I mean, I think it's on Instagram. They have the
yeah.
video of it.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
it's bad. Like, I think there one of my playing partners up ahead and it went over his head. And he's like, whoa, where did that thing go? And so I'm like, well, kind of took a moment. And I'd been working really hard with a mental coach. He's a former Navy SEAL. And we had just been talking about process and like all the cliches when it comes to sports.
Mm-hmm.
And my thing is the last two, three tournaments, I just go through, and if I had a good process, I put a check mark. If I had a bad process, I'll put an X. If it was just kind of a mediocre, we'll just put a dash. And honestly, Jeff, like, I did everything I could mentally and just went, yep, we did it. And so I just put my check mark and moved on. That's how we did it.
Amen. We're talking to pro golfer Zach Fisher. He's a friend of mine and his family, good friends. And so perseverance. He won in the tournament, Acunet Classic in Amarillo. And it was a great, great victory. You're listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. We'll be right back.
This is Real Truth for Today. Podcasts of the program are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff here talking to pro golfer Zach Fisher. He just won the Korn Ferry Tournament, the Acunet Classic in Amarillo. He shot 14 under, won by one stroke. It was his first victory on the Korn Ferry Tour. And Zach, that comes with a lot of prestige. That comes with a big payday. It was how many, 14 years in the making?
Yeah, I guess 14 years. Yeah. Thanks for reminding me of that.
Okay, so you're the Korn Ferry has a lot of young guys. You got a lot of young 20 guys, 20-year-old guys in early 20s, guys that can bomb it. You're considered, I looked you up and that said Zach Fisher is a journeyman.
Yeah.
Because you've been in the league a long time. Mm-hmm. So winning that tournament, and we were talking about nerves. So you're over the putt on 18. It was a 3 or 4 footer?
It was about 2.5 feet, but we'll go with 4. Let's go 4. Yeah, it's like 2.5 feet.
Okay, so ordinarily, that's, I mean, you can close your eyes and make that. But now when everything's on the line, what was your heart doing on that one?
Oh, man. It was funny because I asked my caddy on the tee box, and I was like, how many shot lead do we have? And he looked at his phone, and it hadn't updated, but it said 2. And I was like, okay, well, we'll just hit a 3-wood out there short of the bunker, and I just hit it, and I just hammered it. And I guess the adrenaline, I flew it in that bunker, and I did not want to hit the bunker. So I'm like, well, we're just going to hit it on the green because I still have a 2-shot lead, and then we'll 3-putt and we'll win. Mm-hmm. And I hit it just above the hole, and looking at my lag putt, it's a really fast downhill putt, and I hit a perfect lag putt just to like 2.5 feet, like you were talking about. Mm-hmm. And I look up at the scoreboard after I'd marked my putt, and I'm like, man, that dude birdied that last hole, and now I have to make this putt. I'm like, well, that's crazy. And so it was the easiest putt. I mean, if you went on to the green, it couldn't have been an easier putt. But yeah, it was 2.5 feet. You're still missable. Very missable.
Well, if you had known before you hit the lag putt that I got to get this up and down.
Right.
How would that have affected things?
Yeah, I don't know because I didn't get to see it. But like, it was still like I'm still going through my process. Everything was exactly the same. It could have infected me like just a little bit more nervy, and maybe I left it short, you know, instead of hitting past the hole. There's a lot of variables in that aspect. I'm really glad I didn't see that he had birdied that hole because it definitely kept my nerves a little bit easier. And I mean, I hit a perfect putt just right past the hole. And then the 2.5 footer, I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to go through my process, and I have like a rhythm in my head where I know it's like I have a beep, and then I stroke it. And so I'm like, I'm just going to stay with that. And if I miss it, at least I know that I did my process perfectly, and we'll just go to the playoff.
Right.
And it just went in the hole. And then it was like, everybody's like, man, what did you feel? And I was like, honestly, it felt like another putt, which is kind of what you want. You don't want to be like, give yourself more anxiety or nervousness over
okay,
the putt.
Okay, so for a golfer, especially a pro golfer, and you know that there's a lot riding on these things. You know, you in the PGA, I mean, it's like finishing first or finishing second is like $1 million.
Oh, difference. Yeah. And there's like status levels and all that. Like, for sure, it's a big deal.
So how do you keep that out of your mind?
I mean, honestly, I think like it's just about whenever you're out there, like you can eat, like I was talking about with you before the program. You can easily, whenever you're watching it on TV, put all these variables in your mind because, like, you have a lot of time. Whereas when you're on the course, you only have about I mean, I guess into the shot, like it normally takes me, I think, average 45 seconds to hit a shot. Mm-hmm. So you don't really have time to think about all of the variables and all that. I guess from shot to shot, you can think about it. But I'm talking with my caddy, and you have to just stay engaged in the moment on the course. Because mm-hmm. the moment you start going off into, you know, what could happen, right. it just, you're going to go through a rabbit hole, and you just... You can think it because you can't control your thoughts. Like you're going to have, but you, right. it's like you just have to let it go. You have to let it go through.
Yeah. Well, I heard you in an interview, Zach, you were talking about that shank. And I remember talking to your uncle, Bobby, and he was playing in a tournament. Obviously, you know, small potatoes, but he's playing in a tournament and he's doing really well. And then all of a sudden, like at hole 17, he gets the shanks. And golfers know that once you get that, it can kind of... One turns into two, turns into three.
Right.
Does that even happen with the pro game?
So I hadn't shanked one in a tournament probably since I was a kid. And so it took me aback because I had shanked one on the driving range because I was working on some swing stuff several weeks back, maybe in a month before. But I thought I'd kind of gotten out of it. And then when I did that, I was like, I mean, I knew why I did it, which is big. But it's kind of one of those things, like if the plane's going down, you don't want the pilot to throw up his hands, go, oh, the plane's going to crash. It's over. You know, we're all going to die.
Yeah.
You know, he just gets out the emergency checklist and he just calmly, like you hear it on all the ATC chatter and all that. Like they're very in cockpit chatter. Everything's very calm. Mm-hmm. The moment you start getting anxious, then my caddy gets anxious. Everybody gets really, there's a lot of bad things that can happen. So you just stay calm. I had time and I just regrouped and I was like, well, I'm not hitting that club I hit out of bounds. So I grabbed my pitching wedge, the shot that I was going to hit before, and I hit it on the green how we wanted to. But that wasn't the hard shot. The next shot was after on 15, I hit my tee shot in the fairway. And I'm like, now that I was behind these hills, I couldn't see the green. And I'm like, there's people on the hill. And I'm like, there's a lot of like bad things can happen if I shank it again. Mm-hmm. But I didn't hit a good shot, I can't say. But like those, that was the next one that was really difficult. But I'm like, I'm not going to hit it hard because the last time I tried to hit one hard, I shanked it. So I'm just going to hit a soft shot. And mm-hmm. But I still stay very calm. Like you can't let your nerves, you know, go up and down because the moment you do, you're just done.
Okay, so you going into the last hole on the last day, you think you have a two-shot lead, or you did have a two-shot lead when you teed off.
Right.
So you play the whole way different with a two-shot lead because I'm just playing for a five, or what are you doing?
Yeah, I was just trying to keep it. I was trying to make a five, like no matter what. But there was some like tall grass on the left, and then the bunker was on the right. And I'm like, well, if I just keep it in the shorter grass, I can hit it on the green. And then it happened to go in the bunker. And like in the sand, like you can get really good lies or you can get bad lies. I mean, people have been in there before and then they're supposed to rake it really well, make it pretty, but sometimes they don't do that. And it just happened, I guess the Lord just put it on a tee. I mean, I couldn't have placed it any better in the sand. And and so it was like almost in the fairway. But I'm like, well, we got to get it. There's like some really tall like grass in front of me. I'm like, we got to get over the grass.
How far out were you?
I was 140, but it was like uphill like 7 yards, so it played 147. And I mean, I hit a perfect shot, exactly like how I would want to off of the driving range out of the sand, and hit it right above the hole and almost caught this ridge and rolled back, and yeah, it was perfect.
Well, you know, I think about, and golfers will know the name Jean Vandeveld.
Oh, yes.
You know, so he's got a three-shot lead at the British Open. Mm-hmm. I forget what year it was, in the 90s maybe. And guys, you know, he melted down, he got a seven, but people would, you know, armchair quarterback the guy, well, you're stupid. You should have hit a three wood or, you know, just hit a nine iron. You're up by three.
Right. You make a six, you win.
Yeah. So if you're that guy and you're up three shots on a major tournament like that, how different do you play the hole?
To John Vandeveld's defense, everybody gets onto him about the tee shot. He hit a driver. It ended up getting really lucky and not going in the water. The second shot was the one that killed him. So he tried to hit it over this big creek across the green instead of just like hitting like a sand wedge in the fairway. Because mm-hmm. if he just hits a little sand wedge, he hits another sand wedge on the green and he makes five and he wins by two. Mm-hmm. Or he could three putt and win by one.
Right.
But when he tried to hit it across the water, I think that was his worst mistake. And he kind of got unlucky because it went into the grandstands, went back across the water, and then he chips it, and it's just, he compounded mistakes, which right. in that moment, and honestly, it's as much on his caddy as it is on him. Like, so he should have pulled him off and be like, look, we got lucky off the tee. Let's just take our medicine.
So Zach, do caddies have the green light when it comes to that?
In that moment, for sure. Like, if you don't have a caddy, like, screaming at you, because the driver was fine. Like, he hits in the water off the tee, it's not the end of the world. Because then he can just lay up short and still make six. Like, it's easy. It's the second shot where the caddy should have been like, look, we don't need to get it over the water. Let's just hit it short of the water and hit it over the water on the next one.
Okay, so for a pro golfer, if you look at a par four and you say, okay, I want you to get a six, you could do that 99 times out of 100 without any problem?
Yeah, for sure. Like, so I remember several years back, I don't remember how many it was, but I played in the Texarkana City Championship. And Texarkana Country Club, the 18th hole, is a big dog leg to the left. And normally I would just hit it over the trees, hit it up closer to the green, and chip it on. I had a two-shot lead at the time. And I literally, I think, hit a 5-iron or 4-iron to the corner, like where I would, like where you're supposed to play the hole back when it was built. And then I hit, I think, a pitching wedge. There's like a little grass bunker that's in front, short of the bunker. And then I hit like a sand wedge onto the green, and I two-putted, and I won by one. And so you just... Who cares what happens on, you know, the score? All it matters is
winning.
The end of the tournament. Nobody cares that you made a five on the last hole or a six. It's like you just have to finish the race and just go through it and not do something silly, because that's basically what happened for him.
All right, so let me ask you this. As we think about perseverance, and the Lord values perseverance, you know, I'm not going to quit. I'm not going to throw in the towel. And I've talked to your dad about this. You know, it does come back as a Christian. God, what do you want me to do?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, because being a pro golfer is hard in that the game is hard, but then you're always gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tournaments aren't at your house.
Correct.
You know, you're a road dog. And I know you're driving to a lot of these places. It costs money to get there. It costs money to enter. There, you're guaranteed nothing.
Correct.
So you can burn a lot of dollars
really fast,
and not get any money for it.
Oh yeah.
So how did you deal with the, you know, should I throw in the towel? Should I quit? How did you deal with that over these years?
I think there's been many times where I felt like, it seems like fiscally I should quit. I mean, heck, this year, financially, we weren't in a great spot. You know, having two kids and my wife, and thank the Lord she works and provides for our family whenever I can't, especially because, you know, there's a really, really big dry season where I don't play golf from October to February, basically. Mm-hmm. And this year, I didn't get any starts until March. And so she's a part-time core reporter and just a hero for our family and keeping us afloat. But it seems like every single time I think I should quit, and I would pray to the Lord, and I'm like, Lord, we're in a bad spot, and if you want me to keep playing, I don't know what we can do. And he would always provide. In 2019, I was really close, and I ended up qualifying for the Valero. And then I made a six-figure check in that. And, I mean, we were well in credit card debt. And, like, my wife wasn't working full-time. Or she was, but it wasn't near the job she was working with as a court reporter. And he just provided out of nowhere. And then in 2022, when I won Q School the second time, we were in a bad spot there, too. And I didn't even know if I could go to Q School because it's $5,000 for Q School.
Right.
And
plus food.
Yeah, like, that's just the entry fee. Like, yeah, and you're having to travel to individual spots. And I remember there was a point where we didn't have the money to give. I'd played well in a tournament, but we had credit cards, and I had to pay the credit card, or we're going to, you know, they're going to come find me or whatever.
Right.
And, but like, I still had to give. And my dad has always been a big proponent of giving. And he's like, even if, you know, you don't have the money in your account, you write the check and just pray that the Lord provides. And he always provides. And I remember I wrote a check. It was taxes. I had to write a tax check. That's what it was. And he gave us like, almost to like within 15, 20 cents, randomly had a thing come in the mail. And I was like, wow, there's a check. And it was like almost the exact same money that we had sent to the IRS, which is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many stories where he provides for people. And I was like, I got one of those checks. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And so like, if you're faithful in your giving, he'll always be faithful to you. And I mean, like I was saying, even in this year, like, there was a time where my wife was like, do we really need to keep playing? Because, like, it's expensive. I was down in Argentina and Chile, and, like, I pay for plane flights, and I was fortunate to have a buddy of mine go caddy for me. But, like, if you don't have a caddy, it's, I mean, $1,000 for the caddy. And so, like...
Right. You pay that whether you win or not.
You're right. And then he provided, and he helped me finish tied for 11th in Chile, and that gave me a chance to even play in Amarillo. Mm-hmm. And so he's just constantly giving me signs that I should just keep going. And even through my wife, like, she's just, like I was saying, like, she's just been the supporter and telling me to keep going. And until she basically says that we shouldn't keep going, because if you have your true soulmate, mm-hmm. he's not going to put something on your heart that's not on her heart.
Right.
So that's what we were told in premarital counseling. Mm-hmm.
So you're on the same page.
Yeah, we're always on the same page. Mm-hmm. And so I've kept going, and thank the Lord he provided us with a huge win, and I'm in a position to possibly get a PGA Tour card, which I've really never had that opportunity.
Yeah. Okay, so you went from, we have about 2 minutes before break, you went from 86th place on the Korn Ferry leaderboard, mm-hmm. and points, it's all about points. And
right.
You get so many points when you finish, you know, first through, what, through 50th?
Through the cut. So, like, okay. Yeah, it could be however many people make the cut.
And so you went from 86th, you win, now you're 16th place.
Yeah.
I mean, you've catapulted.
Huge, yeah.
Yes. So what does that mean?
So the top 20 at the end of the year get a PGA Tour card. So essentially, I'm four inside the PGA Tour card number. End of the year is probably going to be closer to like 1,200 points gets their PGA Tour card, and I've got like 650 points or something like that.
Okay.
So I'm a little bit over halfway, which it's a big deal to already have this point, because I've never, I don't think ever had 650 points in my career. So
is that right?
Yeah.
All right, so you have, I think your dad told me, 10 more tournaments before the end of the year?
11, I think.
11 before the end of the season? Mm-hmm. So opportunities to do well, and your confidence has to be really high right now.
Yeah, huge, yeah. Like I was saying, my mental game is probably in the best spot it's ever been. I found something in my golf swing in Raleigh, which was 2 weeks, or I guess the week before Raleigh for me, or before Amarillo for me, and I'm so excited about where my golf game is.
Yeah. How cool is that? We're talking to pro golfer Zach Fisher. He just won the Acunet Classic in Amarillo, shooting 14 under, winning by one stroke. It's his first victory on the Korn Ferry Tour. The Korn Ferry is the PGA Tour for, it's kind of, I don't know how.
AAA golf. That's the best way to call it.
AAA golf. And the next step is the PGA. Zach has persevered, and the Lord values perseverance. So you're listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. We'll be right back with more Zach Fisher after the break.
Candace talks about finding out she was pregnant. Thankfully, an ultrasound provided by Preborn allowed her to hear her baby's heartbeat.
The sonogram sealed the deal for me. My baby was like this tiny little spectrum of hope. And I saw his heart beating on the screen. And knowing that there's life growing inside, I mean, that sonogram changed my life. I went from just Candace to mom. Thank you to everybody that has given these gifts. You guys are giving more than money. You guys are giving love.
Preborn currently has clinics that do not have ultrasound machines. Would you consider a leadership gift and sponsor a machine today? These life-saving machines cost $15,000, more than most centers can afford. Your donation will save countless lives for years to come. Dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or go to preborn.com/AFR.
If you'd like to contact Pastor Jeff, email pastorjeff@fromhisheart.org. Now, back to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. Hey, I want to take this opportunity to just remind you about the Ten Commandments Project. The project is mainly a children and youth discipleship project. It's fun. and very effective. And it's a project that any believer can plug into and have an impact with their children on. And here's the thing. It's in three parts. The Ten Commandment Project t-shirt. A youth can win a free t-shirt with the Ten Commandments on it by memorizing the Ten Commandments. Mom and Dad, do that with your child, and everybody benefits from it. Number two, a church or ministry can do a four-week community outreach project, sharing the gospel and teaching the Ten Commandments to youth and children in your community. And you can contact Joseph Parker with AFA on details of how to do this outreach. jparker@afa.net. And then number three, encourage youth that you know to get involved with the Ten Commandments Project Speech Challenge, where the participants do a short speech, they videotape it, and turn that in, and some aspect of the Ten Commandments that you can talk about for 3 to 4 minutes, and it's just an opportunity to really grow. And so you can find out more at American Family Radio, AFA.net, and it'll be a blessing for you and for your child. Well, we're talking to Zach Fisher. We're talking about perseverance. He won the golf tournament in Amarillo Acunet Classic for the Korn Ferry Tour and shot 14 under, which is anybody that plays golf, 14 under is a great score. He won by one, and this opened up lots of doors. So, Zach, were you ready for how this kind of changes things for you?
Yes and no. Honestly, a lot of people have asked me, like, what did it feel like, you know, waking up on Monday? And I was like, man, we drove all the way back from Amarillo on Monday with two kids.
That's 10 hours?
It was 10 hours with the kids. It's like 8:15 if I was just by myself. But, I mean, everybody knows with kids, like, it's at least another 2 hours when you're driving 8 hours.
Yes.
And the crazy thing, I think it was seeing how many people reached out to me and told me congratulations. I think I had like 180 text messages.
Oh, wow.
And I like to respond back to everybody, and I try not to do the same exact thing, copy-paste or whatever.
Yeah, it's hard not to do that.
Man, and the crazy thing wasn't like responding back, but they would always respond back to me, and I'm like, man, it's like still like 178 text messages. Like, I can't get away from it.
When does it end?
Yeah. Yes. So, but it was really cool.
Did you hear from Bill Rogers?
Yes. Yeah, he texted me actually just a couple days. And it's funny because I feel like the golfers, like, know the drill. And so I got all my text messages from my buddies and people who have played professionally 4 days afterward, because they're like, I knew your phone was going to be blowing up. And I'm like, thank the Lord they didn't text me, because, like, I may miss somebody.
Right.
And so it was really cool for him to reach out. And he's definitely one of my mentors.
Yeah.
And it was cool. Everybody who reached out, and that was probably one of the biggest things, was just seeing, man, how many people actually watch and care and love on me.
You know, Zach, when you think about how hard it is to win on the professional level, and you see a guy like Scotty and some of these elite guys, you know, Tiger and Jack and those guys, winning consistently. Now, Scotty is not doing as well this year as he has in the past.
Right.
But he's still always lurking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's a phenomenal talent. But it really makes you appreciate, how do you keep doing that?
Yeah. I mean, for Scotty, it's definitely like his perspective. And I mean, winning is just, like, he loves competition, so he likes to win just for competition. But I mean, he's one of the most God-fearing people probably out there on the tour, and that's right. And I mean, in his interview, I think last year at the British Open, where he's like, "Man, if I win, it's just another tournament. Like, I'm gonna wake up and be a dad." And
right.
And it if you have that perspective, you know, the nervous side kind of goes away, because it's like, it doesn't mean as much to you, just because. It's more just you want to win. It's just your competition coming out. But right. If it's not who you are, whereas, you know, some of the people in the past have had issues with, like, winning is everything.
Right.
And for him, it's like, no, it's just, I mean, cool, I got another trophy, and I love winning, but it's like, yeah, if I was to make the cut, it's cool, but it's not who I am. It's just right. What I do. And so that's, I think, kind of going back to what I felt in that moment, it was like, it was cool to win and have everybody reach out, but I'm still a dad, and
right.
I mean, I'd love to get on the PGA Tour, but I mean, I'm going to have a spot on the Korn Ferry Tour again next year. And I've had dry seasons where there's no status.
Right.
And that's brutal. So,
well, then you're scrambling just to get.
Yeah, because the financially, it's really difficult. If you're playing, I guess, AA golf, which is PGA Tour Americas, there's no money out there, and having a whole family to support. And but having an opportunity for sure to have, I mean, I'm going to have status on the Korn Ferry Tour for 10 years if I want it. And if the Lord wants me to keep going, and there's just a lot of opportunities.
Okay, so on the Korn Ferry Tour, you called it AAA golf. AAA
golf.
What are they? Are you one of the older guys on the tour?
I'd say I'm definitely one of the older ones. There's guys who are in their 40s for sure. Because I mean, if you're playing pretty well, you can still make a living. You're not going to have, you know, the lavish life that a PGA Tour guy would have. A lot of guys kind of quit playing if they, you know, get to where they're not near the bottom of the list. Because if you finish number 75 on the list, you keep your card and you'll probably make maybe $130,000 for the year, which sounds great, but you're going to have $75,000-$80,000 in expenses.
Yeah, so if you're frugal.
Yeah, and that you're trying to live off of $50,000 with, you know, two kids or three kids or however many kids they have, right, and a wife, and it's like, yeah, that's just not much money.
So as a Korn Ferry pro golfer, do they have insurance and things like that?
So they have health benefits, and there's also other cool benefits, like they get a thing through Omni. And so like all this stuff, like I've qualified for, which is really cool. And we'll get to take some vacations. I think we may go to Disney World, which a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old, I've never been personally, but that's going to be so much fun to see, you know, them see all their princesses, and they'll probably get dressed up. And
yeah,
I mean, it wouldn't mean that. I like Universal better. I think it's a lot cooler, but yeah, just to see their reaction will be so cool.
Okay. So, the Christian environment on the tour. I know that Jose Alvarez is a friend of mine, and he had a ministry, I guess he still does, to pro golfers. What has been your experience with the Christian influence on the pro golf tour?
I mean, it's really cool. The Korn Ferry Tour, I've never had a status on the PGA Tour, and I know they have a Bible study on Tuesday nights, but the Korn Ferry Tour is much more, I don't know, if anyone's ever been to a minor league baseball game where it's more family-oriented and everything's just, it's kind of like that on the Korn Ferry Tour. It's like a big family. Mm-hmm. Everybody's, you're trying to get a PGA Tour card, but everybody's kind of pulling for each other, and it's a really cool atmosphere. So, I mean, we have a Bible study on Tuesday nights, and I mean, we may have 50, 60 people at this Bible study.
Is that right?
So it's really cool, and I feel like it's gotten even bigger, and there's a lot of really, really solid believers out on the tour. And I mean, heck, I think Philip Knowles, he's a member of the tour, and he led the Bible study in Amarillo. So we got some really, really strong believers, and it's really cool to see how the Lord is working out on the tour.
Zach, let me ask you this. I asked Bill Rogers this when he was on the program. I said, Bill, if you're known as a big hitter, like daily playing with Tiger, you know, Daly doesn't want to get outdriven, obviously, because that's what he was known for.
That's our macho ego, right?
So does that affect, I asked him, I said, does it affect you playing with somebody that is maybe outdriving you and you think, yeah, I'm going to hit it a little harder? Do you ever struggle with that?
I think when I was a younger pro, it definitely got me whenever someone was hitting it like 30 to 40 by me. But the more I've gotten seasoned and realized, you know, that's just not my game. Like, I'm not going to hit it. Like, my ball speed is like in the 170s. And you get some, I think, I mean, you watch the U.S. Open this week, and it can be like, I mean, you have some guys in the 190s. So, I mean, I'm just never going to be that guy. It's just how I am, and I know that. So you just have to play your game. And my game is hit it in the fairway. I did a great job of that in Amarillo. I hit it on the green, and I feel like I'm a pretty good putter. And so if you give me a bunch of opportunities, I got a pretty good chance.
Okay, Matt, now you did change your swing to gain more yardage, in, what, 5-6 years ago?
That was in college when I first did that. But then, yeah, I guess in 2022, I kind of went through I lengthened my backswing to get a little bit more arc, so I get a little more distance. And, I wanted to get it because I was probably in the low mid 160s. And so, like, I've definitely gained, like, some speed. But it also kind of got me in some bad habits in the same way, because like it was different.
Lose control.
Yeah, it was a little bit more control. But and now I've kind of understood what my swing coach Jeff Jones has been preaching to me for I don't know how many years. It's been 20 something years we've worked together, and I mean, it's taken me that long to finally realize, like, I can try to hit as hard in the trees left and it go really straight, but the moment you don't commit to it and you don't trust it, like, it's going to go right or left. And so I learned that in Raleigh a few weeks ago, and it's really difficult when there's water out of bounds over there to like, yeah, I'm going to try to purposefully hit it over there. But you just have to trust that it's going to go where it's supposed to go. And if it doesn't, hey, you hit it out of bounds. They're not gonna tie you up, and it's just
take your children.
Just another thing.
Okay, so I saw a clip with Paul Azinger, who's major golfer from yesteryear, and he said he thinks that the best thing for a golfer is to just not think about anything for that swing. Just kind of clear your mind. Just let your body take over. You've grooved this swing. You've done it for, you know, all these years. And would you agree to that?
I am not that guy. I can't do it. So I have to have a quote swing thought. And like what I was saying, like I have to try to hit it to the left. Like that's I have way more feels in my golf swing than I guess maybe the average golfer. I don't know. You can't play golf with two swing thoughts in your head. Like, it's just impossible. But you can play with one swing thought. Like, you can play with one swing thought on your backswing and one swing thought in your through swing, because it's two different motions. But if you try to do two in your backswing or two in your through swing, you got no chance, because you can't think of two things at once. Like, it's just not possible. And when I won Q School the first time, I remember I had one swing thought. It was like, complete my backswing and then keep my right shoulder moving. And kind of the same thing I did in Amarillo was like, make sure I make a good deep turn and then make sure I try to hit it left. And so it's like almost like it kind of gets a rhythm for me. And so I can't do the Paul Azinger thing.
How would that work with little short shots, little chips and putts and things like that? Same kind of thing?
It's kind of the same thing, because I've struggling with not making enough backswing on my chipping. And so then if you don't make enough backswing, like, you got to create the speed somewhere. So you get a little bit more speed in, your downswing. And so you can't control the distance the way you want to. So, yeah, most people who struggle with chipping make a really short backswing and then try to make it really fast. And kind of the same with putting. Like, the longer your backswing is in putting, the more distance control you have. It's just like if you were throwing, you know, a cornhole, like, you're not trying to really, really make your arm go fast. Like, you're trying to keep a good rhythm.
Yeah.
And like, if you make a really short, like, back, like trying to get the bag to the cornhole, like, it's impossible. Like, you just can't, you can't get it. So like, if you ever watch on ESPN, like, these guys, like, it's amazing how good they are. But it's such a good rhythm. It's real smooth. And same way PGA Tour, it's everything smooth. Like, you can't control it. So anybody struggling with their chipping, try to make a little bit longer backswing and a little bit shorter through swing. And so that way you can control where the club comes down, and it's just much easier.
I saw this one guy, his name's Jimmy Tropicana. I don't know if you've ever heard of Jimmy.
I've heard that name, but I don't know who he is.
So he kind of has golf instruction for hackers.
Okay.
And one of the things he said was really good. He said, think about a swing where you, as a kid, you sit on a swing. He said, when you go back, you're not coming right through. There's a little pause there where you have to change direction. And it's really a good thought, because tempo is really critical in the golf swing.
It's huge. In golf swing, especially in short shots, I mean, that's probably where amateurs get it wrong the most, is they get quick. It's like, no, you take your time. Like, it's so much easier if you're just rolling a ball with your hand, like, to just roll it. If you, like, that's what I always do in clinics. It's like, if you see someone struggling, it's like, get a ball and just have them roll it to the hole, and they're not going to just jerk their hand really fast. It's gonna be very gentle, and like, they're gonna try to get the touchdown. And I'm like, that's what you have to do with a golf club. It's the same principle. And they're like, oh, I didn't realize you're supposed to do it that slow. Yeah.
Okay, I gotta ask you, I've played a lot of golf with your dad and with your uncle Bobby, and Bobby is he's a better golfer than your dad, but your dad has got a better short game than Bobby does.
Yeah.
But your dad has so many moving parts to his swing.
Yes.
What would you say about your dad's golf swing?
So we did a really funny thing. Whenever I was in high school, I had a really short swing. It was not fast, but it was I guess it was fast. Quick, I should say.
John Rahm type.
Yeah, very, very, very John Rahm-esque. And I remember my dad, we played the entire golf swing for me. We had it on the same frame rate, and he hadn't completed his backswing before I had hit the ball and finished into my swing. We say he has a pretzel swing. But hey, he can still hit it.
He can hit it.
Yeah,
he's a great. He's a good player. Mm-hmm. Well, Zach, thanks so much for being my guest today. Hey, I'm so proud of you, and you have many people in Texarkana that are proud of you. You have persevered, and God has blessed you, and we look forward to great things coming from this first win on the Korn Ferry Tour. Hey, as we always say on Real Truth for Today, go out today, shine for Christ, and share what great things the Lord has done for you, and God will use you as his witness. God bless you.